Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Internet.
Good day.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
We were just talking about air conditioning.
Our discomfort.
When we need it and when we don't, and when we need it and don't have it, and when things go sideways as a result.
Yeah, and when you pay for it, which is a whole other thing.
And when you pay for it, you go, huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Great let's big. Minimize this.
That's my great car big payment right there.
Well, Tom Merritt, we were just talking about maybe on a plane or very near being on a plane that will be landing in the metro area of Seoul, Korea, soon enough. Very exciting. Can't wait to get updates from him. Well, we have a show to do, and the show must go on. So who's with me?
I'm with you.
I am here.
Happy to hear that. All right, let's do this show. I will count myself in 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Kirk Stephenson, Miss Music Teacher, James C. Smith, and new patrons, Christopher, Royce, and Ole Them Bones. On this episode of DTNS, OpenAI is making more money than even it expected, Samsung doubles down on the smart kitchen, and is no company safe from price hikes? Sony weighs in. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. From Studio Dog Snores, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We've got all sorts of stuff to talk about. We got kitchens that are getting smarter. We got AI that is getting bought. Earlier in the day, Google announced a hardware event on October 4th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time in New York City. Company is expected to unveil the Pixel 8, Pixel 8 Pro, and Pixel Watch 2. Let's move on to the quick hits. Huawei launched its Mate 60 Pro phone for 6,999 won, or about $960 US, without any real advertising or promotion. Caught some people by surprise. Users who bought the phone have been conducting tests that they say showed it could match the network speeds of 5G chipset phones, as well as screenshots saying it uses a Kirin 9000S chip.
Well, we got some more news from Google Cloud Next, which is happening this week. General Motors announced Google Cloud's conversational chatbot, Dialogflow. You may have heard of it. Will now be part of non-emergency OnStar features, answering common questions like navigation questions, that sort of thing. Dialogflow can also identify words that indicate an emergency situation and then route the call to a live advisor. The service is available in most GM models newer than 2015, and GM says the OnStar digital assistant handles over 1 million inquiries per month in the U.S. and Canada. Also from Google Cloud, Google Chat now has some new operability with third-party platforms Slack and Teams, and they're doing this through Mio, not sure which way they say that. I think it's Mio, a cross-platform subscription service. The feature is available now in beta, with general availability coming later in 2024.
Yeah, I would say Mio, but it could be
Mio. It's Mio. Mama Mio.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, like me. Mio.
Yeah.
Yahoo Mail. Many of us still have a Yahoo Mail account, and that has a new beta for an AI tool with four big features: a writing assistant, a message summaries, shopper saver, and search. The AI search allows for natural language queries, like asking to bring up all mail from a certain contact that you have, or when you plan to meet with somebody else. The AI beta is currently only available to Yahoo Mail users in the U.S., and there's a sign-up page if you want to learn more and gain access.
Time to dust off your Yahoo Mail address, everyone. Dutch sustainability-minded smartphone company Fairphone announced the Fairphone 5. Like previous models, the Fairphone 5 is designed with user repairability in mind and comes with a 90 hertz, 1223 by 2070 OLED display. It has two 50-megapixel cameras on the back that are user-replaceable and one 50-megapixel selfie camera up front. The user-replaceable battery is rated at 4,200 milliamp hours, 30-watt charging, and is usable for 1,000 charging cycles. It has a Qualcomm QCM6590, 8 gigabit of RAM, and 256 gigabytes of storage. That's expandable up to 2 terabytes with a micro SD. Prices start at 699 euros in the Eurozone for 619 pounds in the UK. No plans for US release yet. The company is taking pre-orders now, though.
Now, a lot of those specs are pretty good. Remember when a 50 megapixel selfie camera would have been outlandish?
I remember when a 50 megapixel camera, period, was outlandish.
Well, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's sort of like, 50 megapixel selfie camera on the front, but you got duals in the back. It's like, wow, yeah, we've really come a long way when it comes to cameras on mobile devices. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, ordered Tesla to disclose how many vehicles have the updated option to use the autopilot driver assist mode for extended periods without driver checks. Chief Counsel John Donaldson wrote, quote, "The resulting relaxation of controls designed to ensure that the driver remain engaged in the dynamic driving task could lead to greater driver inattention and failure of the driver to properly supervise autopilot," end quote.
Nice.
Those are the biggies.
All right, let's talk a little bit about OpenAI. If you were wondering how much OpenAI's ChatGPT is making inroads, well, the information's got you covered. Their sources say the company is expected to make more than $1 billion U.S. in revenue in the first, in the next year from sales of AI software and computing power. This is a significant figure by any stretch or reasoning because it's way above the estimate AI itself had previously given investors. So what do we think is actually going on here, Sarah?
Yeah, okay. So OpenAI does a variety of things, but ChatGPT is its big cash cow right now. Before ChatGPT launched, OpenAI projected revenue of $28 million in 2021. That was annual. Saying, yeah, we think we got something here and we might be able to license it. Not too shabby, right? The latest estimate indicates that OpenAI has now generated more than $80 million in revenue per month. So not only does that just blow the initial number out of the water, but that's monthly, not annually. A lot of companies want to pay for versions of this. You might already use versions of this from other customers that OpenAI is working with, like Zoom or Stripe or Notion or Databricks. Microsoft uses OpenAI's technology in Office 365, Bing Chat, GitHub Copilot, and others. Now, just a few days ago, OpenAI had launched ChatGPT Enterprise, promising more privacy, direct connectivity to more enterprise software, which also competes with Microsoft's offerings, which leads me to suspect that Microsoft and OpenAI might not have the chummy relationship that they have now. But Scott, this really speaks to how seemingly out of nowhere, if you follow the space, it wasn't totally out of nowhere, but for many people, especially on the consumer side and even people on the enterprise side, OpenAI and ChatGPT really did sort of arrive out of nowhere to the point where everyone said, Google Bard is late. Well, Google Bard was not late, maybe just, you know, late to the PR game. But I wonder how long a company like OpenAI can enjoy being first.
Well,
OpenAI can certainly say that for now. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, they've got the lead for now. I mean, the phrase first is worst, at least in technology space, is I think sometimes accurate. I hate to say it, but there are a lot of cases, a lot of historical cases where big innovation comes out of somebody you never see coming. And then what happens is the established, long-term, deep roots tech companies either do their own thing or do something better or do something new because they've got both the capabilities and the vast resources to kind of pick up new trends and take them in new directions. Things like the iPod are good examples compared to all the other MP3 players that kind of died on the vine at the time. And there are lots of other examples. You could even argue Google with its superior search algorithm coming along after other search engines existed and sort of cleaned house. I fear for them, for OpenAI, that they're going to have a similar situation. I think they are smart, though, to quote-unquote flood the enterprise market with their tools and be the place du jour that everybody wants to get these tools ready for their enterprise solutions, Microsoft included, for now anyway. because that way they can help entrench themselves. I think this is a really smart idea. I think the wrong thing to do would have been them to sort of keep it to themselves, just have the web portal for chatgpt.com and sort of scooch along like that. I think that would have been a major mistake. So I think they are trying to do the things that will help them maintain and keep longevity. But if history has anything to say about it, my guess is down the road, Google as a major factor here, but Google and Apple and Samsung and everyone else and their dog are going to have a pony in this race, and they're going to want their own dog in this race. There's two animals I put in the same race. Crazy, right? Well, that's how crazy the AI business is going to get. And I do think that it's going to be hard to compete with these mega tech corporations down the road, because they have endless resources and really deep pockets to wait out the fad part of it, to wait out the hiccups part of it, and to just sort of be there long term. So AI, OpenAI's got their work cut out for them.
ZDNet, on the subject of OpenAI and ChatGPT specifically, ZDNet points to a Pew Research Center survey. This is really recent, from July 17th through the 23rd, just over 5,000 panelists. So somewhat small of a survey, but the idea was to learn about ChatGPT use. This is US-based. The study found that of the respondents, some had heard of ChatGPT, but of those, only 24% said they'd ever used it, amounting to 18% of US adults overall. So if you're saying, well, I don't even really use ChatGPT, I mean, is it going to change my life? It might. Might not have yet. So don't feel like you're completely left out of this. I think quite a few companies are, in the race to make the AI version of OpenAI's ChatGPT that's, you know, better than the first. And we're still in those early days. But looks like OpenAI for now is printing money until everybody else catches up.
Also, don't throw away the idea that they could be acquired at some point. And that's entirely possible, that somebody as big as Google or Microsoft could swoop in and buy those guys.
100%. Yeah. Or who knows? OpenAI could buy somebody else and
with the money they're making
on its head.
They could buy me.
Well, while we're waiting for that to happen, a little news from Samsung. The company launched an app for Android and iOS called Food. It's a personalized AI-powered food and recipe app, available in 8 languages, serving 104 countries. And it's drawing from the database from the app Whisk. You might recall Samsung acquired Whisk a few years ago. Whisk is a standalone app still, but this is using that same database in more of a Samsung smart home product offering. Users can search for more than 160,000 recipes, use them to make their eating plans. More recipes are planned going forward, but it's a pretty solid start. Samsung Food can connect to Samsung Family Hub smart appliances, refrigerators, ovens, stuff that Samsung wants you to use more of and have a good reason to do that. The AI part of the food app is recommending daily meals. You have got dietary preferences. It learns more about those. It also learns more about what you like based on those dietary preferences. Maybe you just never want souffle mentioned ever again. Also is trying to give you better nutritional ingredient breakdowns. You can add items to shopping lists, send them through e-commerce checkouts. Kind of an one-stop shop for not only wanting food, making the food, eating the food, and then ordering the food later. We all love the idea of this. Many people say, well, there are other options, and there are. Samsung would like you to be within their own ecosystem, though. So this is another offering to do that. So, Scott, we talk sometimes, and we've even sort of snickered about smart home appliances, particularly smart kitchen appliances, like who's ever going to buy the smart refrigerator? But they exist. They're designed to track your health. Samsung makes them. Does this end up selling more Samsung hardware?
I think possibly. I think you made a really good point about ecosystem. I think that's a really important thing here. But I think more fundamentally, something that has occurred to me lately, and I've heard others try to describe this, it's kind of hard to quantify because we're still early days on what AI's applications are. But it's like, to me, it's like the internet. If you go to ChatGPT, it's like the internet of old. And by old, I mean the last 20 years. You get in, you search for a thing, you do a thing, you say a thing. It's kind of got this multi-purpose use. And so does ChatGPT. It's not really meant to be a very focused, narrow use case. It's kind of broad. And what this represents is something more akin, on the internet anyway, to a smart light turning on when I want it to, or me verbally telling it to turn on. That's still an internet-based function. That's still me using the internet to do a thing, but it's not the same as an email or a text or anything else. So this like narrowing of use cases is where things get interesting to me. And this to me is a example of that. They're saying, look, you've got dietary restrictions, you have allergies, you've got preferences, whatever it may be. And all of that information is part of this machine learning. And that machine learning, and in addition to other outside resources, along with a well-contained ecosystem of services and devices, that being Samsung stuff, this seems like a match made in heaven to me. They already have a very dominant place in the kitchen markets, specifically fridges. They're everywhere. My fridge is a Samsung. And I didn't even try to shop for one. That's just the one I have. And the idea that you could have all that happen in a way that is actually accurate, isn't just guesswork, isn't just based on, well, we sort of think based on your survey, you might like this today. These are going to be the future applications of this stuff. And they're going to be these narrow, laser focused applications. And I am personally very excited about that. That alone makes me more interested in AI than anybody generating an image and saying, look, I'm a painter now, or anybody.
I know, right? We all got to eat.
Yeah, we have to eat. We have to drive. We have to think. We have to talk. We have to use the world around us in ways that this is going to benefit in ways we haven't even thought of yet. But this is a great example of that sort of thinking outside the box, but also in the box, if that makes sense. And really narrowing down what something like this can do for me and you every day.
Yeah, I formerly had a Samsung fridge. Boy, was that a piece of junk. But it wasn't smart. And maybe I just got a lemon. It happens. But Samsung, you know, if you look at the smart hub, specifically in the kitchen, you know, there's smart oven stuff, there's smart blenders, there's, you know, obviously the fridges. There are, you know, lots of things. If you were to say, well, not all my stuff is Samsung, well, okay. I mean, that isn't unlike saying, well, not all of my electronics are, you know, Android based, or, you know, Apple products, that sort of thing. But for those of us who have a few of these, I think this does take you a step further into what I've always found frustrating about some of this smart cooking ability to get recipes and add things to your shopping list. That's all possible, but you really have to work at it. Some time back, this was kind of in pandemic days when I had a little bit of extra time on my hands, and I was doing like very specific calorie counting of every single thing that I ate. I didn't even really have a end game. I just thought, well, this will be fun. You know, I'll just know a little bit more about what I'm putting into my body, especially when I eat a loaf of banana bread by myself several times a week. And, you know, and that was all good, but it would, you know, I could not find a solution that was any less cumbersome than me entering all of this stuff manually and then kind of thinking, okay, based on what I know, here's what I should eat later, or here's, you know, maybe the fiber that I haven't had in a while, or the protein that I would like to have, you know, after 6 p.m. type stuff. All of this, I believe I understand what Samsung is going for, and it is, you know, please buy our products. But even if you buy a few of them, let's make this kind of an entire classroom of learning about what you need. And we're going to do the heavy lifting for you, so you're doing as few manual things as possible that end up being cumbersome, which is why people end up not using things like this.
Yeah. And a whole new place for, you know, Frigidaire, LG, and everybody else to compete on. I'm excited to see this heat up and, you know, try it. I want a new fridge. Let me tell me what to eat, fridge. Let's do this.
Paging Huey Lewis. New song. if you missed out on Tom's How to Make a Great Podcast class, and a few of you didn't, said, hey, we want this. When are you going to do it again? Fear not. You can still get the online course at our DTNS Patreon store. Tom explains the basics of podcast producing. Tom is very good at this, you might have noticed. He also shares his ideas and experiences on what makes a podcast great in general, on various genres. You can get the class either as a downloadable file, or you can stream it over at patreon.com/DTNS/shop.
Now, as you know, here on the show quite a bit, and even recently, been talking about how streaming services are trying to weather the storm of too many cooks in the kitchen. We just talked about one kind of kitchen. Let's talk about another. But that's when it comes to movies and television shows. There are a lot of people trying to compete for your eyeballs, which has led to maybe too many options and also prices raising. How do we feel about that?
Well, I don't feel great about that. And it's kind of funny. We've been talking about streaming services, you know, raising prices because everybody's trying to make the most of doing this. Normally, when stuff like this floods the market, you see prices going down. But we're in a new era of streaming. Seems as though no one is immune, even in the world of gaming. Sony announced on Wednesday it is raising the price of its PlayStation Plus subscription next month. And boy, are people not thrilled about this. PlayStation Plus's Essential plan will go from $60 to $80, $20 increase. Extra plan from $100 to $135, you can do the math there. And the Premium plan from $120 to $160. New pricing starts on September 6th. Now, if you say, well, hold on a second, I'm currently a PlayStation Plus subscriber, you're not going to see these new prices until November 6th, though. A little bit of a respite there, but you are going to see them eventually. If you fuss with your current subscription, though, in this grace period of sorts, like you upgrade or you downgrade or you buy additional time type thing, then you go over to the new plan. So take that into consideration if you're looking to fuss with your current subscription at all. It's very telco of Sony. I went through this with Verizon quite recently, where anyway, that's a story for another time. But for its part, Sony says this will continue bringing high-quality games and value-added benefits to the service, blah, 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 and adds that the yearly plans will still come at a discounted rate as opposed to the 1 or 3 month subscriptions that it offers. That's pretty standard. You know, you pay for more time, you get a little bit of a discount. But like I said, from what I can see online, a lot of people are saying price increase, maybe not the huge surprise, but these price increases are kind of dramatic. What do you think?
They are. They're really dramatic. And the only thing I can think of is we've got this also coming soon-ish from Microsoft, although I don't believe we know an exact number yet for what Game Pass is changing to. The one simplification there, it is one service. Well, Game Pass Ultimate versus a lower service, but it's one big service, basically. It's one tier. And having that at $14.95 as it currently is month to month has been a pretty great value for gamers. I didn't think that would last forever. My expectation is this will end up at $19 a month or something like that, which was the previous high Sony tier for premium, which was also $19.99 a month if you paid month to month. These are significant price increases. And for a company in Sony's case, who had an extremely good recent few quarters, mostly on the back of PlayStation sales, I feel like it's disingenuous for them to say things like, for us to continue to bring you blah, 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 as you put it, which I think is exactly appropriate. So you can tell I'm not real happy about this. I think this is a bad deal for consumers. I really do. It's too much of a jump. And I feel like, I could be wrong, but I feel like we're being experimented on. And Microsoft's not immune to this. I think they're doing similar things. They're literally dropping their $1 14-day Game Pass trial that they've had in place forever. They're dropping that like 3 days before Starfield launches, which is easily their biggest game launch of the year, maybe of the last 5 years. It's a massive thing for them. And there's no way this is a coincidental occurrence where they're going to change that. Basically, they don't want people playing their big AAA game for 14 days for essentially for free because a dollar is barely anything. And it just makes me, as someone who follows this stuff pretty closely, feel like I'm being experimented on. They are trying to see what the market will bear. And I think in Sony's case, it really feels like that to me, because this across the board increase, a significant increase, mind you, for a service that still hasn't proven itself, that still isn't quite up to Game Pass par by a lot of measures. And I like it. I enjoy mine. But am I going to keep doing it for this increase? I don't think I am, because they're not really presenting anything new with it. They're not saying, well, in addition to this, you're going to get these extra games or this other thing, or you're going to play this longer or get access to these betas. They're not saying any of that. They're basically just saying, hey, that thing you already get, here's more. It's already not perfect, but pay more for it anyway. this is going to be a real sour deal. And gamers are notoriously cheap. So I'm not saying it'll backfire on them completely, but nobody's happy about this change.
I mean, you know, I know this wouldn't be gaming specific, but, you know, Netflix raises its price a dollar or two a month and people get mad. You know, it's like, I have a certain budget. Yeah, sure, a dollar or two maybe isn't the end of the world, but I have a budget. You know, that budget is important to me. Sony hiking something up $20 a month, which goes up from there, depending on, you know, the extra plans or the premium plan even that you could get, you know, which goes up $40 a month. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot without, again, without saying, usually when you pay an increase like this, something comes with it. In normal life terms, I don't mean streaming services, but if I'm going to get a car and spend the extra $5,000 on some upgrades, they're going to say, well, here are those upgrades, right? Mm-hmm. You expect to do that. You expect inflation over time, but not all at once like that, and then not give you anything. If they said, oh, I'm sorry, your car as of next week is going to be another $5,000. Oh, what are you giving me for it? Well, it's the same service. You're just going to pay more for the car.
Right.
I would be livid.
It's so we could continue bringing you a high quality car.
Yeah. To me, this smells, like, you know what this reminds me of too? Maybe that's why I'm getting so mad about it. It reminds me of rent hikes. It just, that's what that feels like. It feels like for no reason, you're all profitable beyond measure. You're just, you have money to burn. All you guys doing this and you've had record profits. And you're unwilling to throw us a little bit of a bone here. This isn't going. I mean, it will represent a big increase for them and maybe pad them out for a number of quarters. But you can't do this in perpetuity. I think this
well,
is just.
Well, but not if you lose a lot of. I think you hit it on the head a couple of minutes ago, Scott, when you said this is just Sony testing the waters here, saying what can we get away with until people say, well, this is ludicrous and I'm just going to go, you know, to a competitor or I'm just going to cancel this outright.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, again, for-profit company can do as much as they want to do with that. They might not get the results that they're looking for, but we're still in these kind of early days of these subscriptions.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. I think that's a big part of this and the saturation of the market, but I don't know how they think they're going to compete with everyone else also raising their service prices. Like something's got to give. Maybe Sony's cocky enough to think that everyone else will give, but I don't know if I'd be that cocky if I were them.
Hmm. Well, you know who's kind of cocky? An ant. You know why? Because they're small. They can get through any crevice. They build their own colonies. They're actually quite smart. Don't want them in my house, but I got to give it up for a good old ant. Ants are useful in scientific research because of a lot of the things that I just described. They're small. They can work together. They create farms. Three researchers from the University of Western Australia tested the combat effectiveness of ants against small groups of very powerful combatants against an exponentially larger group of weaker opponents in both simple or flat to complex terrain. If you're saying, what are we talking about? Like some sort of like, you know, like gladiator ant situation? Kind of. The researchers drafted a larger number of invasive Argentine ants and a smaller number of the local, but larger in physical size, variety known as the meat ant. Argentine ants are around 2 millimeters in length. They're small. Meat ants are 4 times the length, whew, and 40 times the weight. They're big old meat ants. Next, the researchers used the real-time strategy game Age of Empires 2. I'm not even kidding about this. To run simulations of combat. Then they tested the same simulation using the ants. The results ended up being kind of similar. Small numbers of very strong warriors, those were the meat ants, the big ants, were able to defeat larger numbers of weaker opponents, aka the Argentine ants. More the Argentine ants, but they weren't really individually stronger. The mortality of the stronger warrior meat ants was low, but did increase slowly as the number of opponents they faced grew. Scott, I don't know. It's Game of Thrones here.
A little bit. I love this whole thing for a variety of reasons. I love this, but my main reason for loving it is because I think it just sort of, to me, it seems obvious on the face of it. If you have an elite group of Navy SEALs and you put those up against, you know, let's say there's 10 of those guys, you put them up against 30 regular infantrymen, I think I give the SEALs an advantage for a while until you keep reinforcing the army on the other side. And then, yes, there's an overwhelming, you know, you can overwhelm them. But so to me, it's obvious. But to know that it's, or to sort of confirm what feels obvious, to do an experiment like this and do it in this way is both super nerdy and kind of great to have a little confirmation of what I already thought. But I think this is great. And I love this kind of experimentation, especially when it comes up on this show.
Me too. And yeah. I'm sorry, all the ants that I killed recently.
Did you kill a bunch recently? What's
I didn't mean to. I don't know. We couldn't live in harmony.
Okay.
I would have just politely let them out the front door, but they didn't want to go that way. They were probably meat ants. Yeah. So I had to kill them dragon style. But yes. thank you to everybody who uses ants as research for us to figure out more about how to build our own armies going forward in the future.
Nice.
Especially in the kitchen with our new Samsung Smart Home. Thanks to you, Scott Johnson, for just putting up with me today. Always good to have you on the show. Let folks know where they can keep up with your latest.
Well, it's my favorite part of Wednesdays, and I usually talk about game stuff and all that on here, and today I'm going to do something different. I talk about movies on the weekend in a little show called Film Sack. We've been doing it forever. 2009, if you want to count that as forever. And it's available every week over at filmsack.com. If you like old movies, new movies, and everything in between, we watch them all and we talk about them and we have a really great time. So go check out what we're doing over there at filmsack.com.
Do it. Do it now. But just a reminder to patrons, do stick around. We have an extended show called Good Day Internet, or GDI. Today we're going to be talking about how Activision is doing more, or at least something new, to moderate so-called toxic behavior in games like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. If it works, would other companies follow suit? But just a reminder, you can catch the show live. We record it live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern at 2000 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're going to be back doing it all again tomorrow with Tayshia Custody joining us. Excited for this one. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Nice.
Delightful show.
Yeah, we've got
some submissions for show titles over at showbot.tv/DTNS2. That's the number 2. Do jump on over there if you're so inclined and make your voice heard on what our show title should be. GDI titles will be hopefully propagating there soon as well.
That's awesome. While we do that, let's talk about the thing you teased a bit, because it's another one of these very, very narrow focused AI issues. In a bid to reduce toxic behavior in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3's online matches, this is the game coming this fall. All right. So their latest game. And if you're a little confused about it being 3, there was a 3 years ago. They're kind of redoing everything. It's a long story. Anyway, Activision is working with Modulate to implement direct voice chat moderation. ToxMod, this is Modulate's AI system that will listen to all conversations and flag ones that are problematic based on tone, emotion, content, and how other players are responding to what those people are saying. Flag data is stored on servers that are, while the initial processing of conversations are done on the initial device. So that's an important note there. Moderators will be alerted to toxic behavior, and then it is left to the moderator to take the appropriate action. The company says its ToxMod system is the company's claim, or at least they claim, is the only voice native moderation system currently available. I think they might be right, or at least ready for to be on stage and go, having protected tens of millions of players, unquote. That's their direct quote there. So this is yet another example of a little bit of a laser-directed AI use case that I think I'm into. People aren't going to trust this for a number of reasons. Gamers are going to hate it because they hear it's Activision and everyone hates Activision. And they have rights to. There's a lot of problems at Activision. But they're going to hear this and think, oh, well, how can I trust them with this and so on. But most of the people that would worry about this sort of thing are the ones that are being toxic in those matches to begin with. Mm-hmm. If you're not already being a jerk in Call of Duty, you're fine. Just play the game and who cares? If you play it like I do, you don't have voice on anyway, so it doesn't matter. But lots of games try to implement systems to manage, maintain, and deal with toxic behavior. They all succeed in some small ways, but mostly fail at the overall problem. Some games worse than others. This seems at least like a concerted effort to do something new that will be at least assisted enough to deal with the volume problem, because that's where the issue is. It isn't so much that, you know, if me, Sarah, and Roger were all in a game playing together and Roger suddenly got all toxic and said horrible things, it would be easy to moderate that. The one guy out of the three said a terrible thing, kick him out of the game. No big deal.
No.
But we're talking about millions of players, hundreds of thousands concurrent players playing cross-platform now, multiple consoles and PC players all playing together, in some case mobile. And that's a volume problem. That's a scalability problem. How do you stop every single kid from dropping the N-word across the planet? It's very difficult to manage that stuff. As just one example, this is perfect for what machine learning and AI is supposed to be good at, which is taking massive amounts of data and narrowing it in on what you actually want to accomplish. So I actually think this is maybe not the ultimate end game. Like, this Activision's implementation may not be what we ultimately get for most multiplayer experiences, but the PvP world will benefit from this application of AI, in my opinion.
I mean, I guess that, but, you know, I can hear a chorus of people right now being like, but then they're listening to everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There will be those.
You know, there's like a couple of ways. It's like, first of all, they are anyway. You know, this is just a, you know, a more sort of like, watch your tone, young man or person, or aunt. You know, aunts are smart. They can probably play this game. You know, and don't say stuff like that, or are we going to weed you out? I feel like, you know, not being a Call of Duty player at all, I have really only heard about some of the behavior that really does turn people off. And, you know, it's not just a matter of like, oh, well, you need better friends, you know, or you need to play with, you know, different folks type of thing. You know, this is something that really hurts franchises, you know.
It does, because if you're average random player that you might run into, because a lot of people aren't playing with their friends, they don't have exclusive groups where they're in a closed off Discord situation, and those people are still in their closed off Discord situation. They're not, this isn't even going to affect them. But if you're using voice chat and text chat within the game client, which is what they're aiming for here, and lots of people do, those people are playing matches with people they don't know. And you can hear some really gnarly stuff on these. This has been true forever. And it's not just this game, many games. League of Legends may be the most notoriously toxic, really, really bad. They've done inroads, but it's still not perfect. There needs to be some sort of solution. But it's, like I said, been bogged down by a volume. It's just a volume problem. You can't scale that kind of support. And it's like, you know, you hear about this sort of stuff happening at social media networks. I'm a little surprised we've survived as long as we have without something like this, because what happens now is we, or at least up till now, we have subjected real life, flesh and blood, decent human beings whose job it is to review horrible content on Facebook, as an example, they have to sit and look at that stuff. And now they're talking about, you know, studies that show these people, regardless of whatever their pay structure is, walking away with PTSD and other issues from having to witness people being killed in videos, content that is just like unbelievably horrible and abusive. So
the moderation tools, of which many, I think, are very well-intentioned. You know, I just did this the other day with, you know, something that I considered spam, you know, but it was an account that I wanted to report. And, you know, I had to go through, this was on X, you know, full disclosure, formerly Twitter. And, you know, there's a, you know, a whole kind of series of well, what did it do? Did it harass you? Did it say something hateful? Was it just spam? Blah, blah, blah. Like, this wasn't something that really upset me one way or another, but it took a few steps.
Right.
And that is a manual thing that I like to do when I can to help the system. I can't do that all the time. That would be like, yeah, like, you might as well pay me to do that. That would be a full-time job if I really tried to, like, whack all the moles. So something that is getting ahead of this kind of behavior, especially in places where it's been notorious. You don't want, like, no gaming company is like, it's so cool that, you know, we're League of Legends is like known for the bad behavior, right, you know, of its users. Well, like, nobody wants that.
Right.
This has been a long time coming, right? I mean, for the longest time, finding good ways to moderate have been as easy to find as a four-leaf clover. And so, I mean, AI is kind of that magic key. And you have to understand, it's not going to automatically kick people out. It just flags them for the moderators to then decide what they do with that person or persons.
It could change in the future, depending on, you know, how good this is. They have to prove that out. But yeah, you're right. It's still going to be human involved.
The internet, you know, online gaming is such a bizarre mix of every, you know, human foible there is, right? You can have, I've played games where people are perfectly fine, and then others where people are just, you know, out and out jerks for some reason that they had a bad day and this is the way they vent. And I think in many ways this is just kind of like a bouncer, right? You have the bouncer at the front of the club or the bar that ensures that even the rowdy patrons that, you know, that come in, you know, can be expected to at least have a reasonable sense of decorum if not in the space, at least for some time before they get thrown out.
Right, and everybody's agreed to whatever the rules are when they go into this bar. Let's continue the metaphor. That bar is something a couple of bouncers can handle because it's 200 people. They can deal with that. Mm-hmm. This bar we're talking about has millions of people in it, some of them all at the same time. There aren't enough bouncers because there's not enough room, there's not enough time, there's none of those things. And even processing people that need to be kicked out on their butt and thrown out in the street is time-consuming and again, doesn't scale very well.
And like you mentioned, Scott, even, you know, some people who, okay, well, this is your job, walk away going, well, I'm not a very happy person because of this. This is just not something I should be doing, you know, 24/7.
Right, right. In this case, when it is their job, it's still too big. So what this represents is potentially closing that gap in a very efficient way. And it should be fast. That's the idea. The whole reason that it's impressive to sit down to ChatGPT and have it write a short story in less than 30 seconds and it make it look like, oh my gosh, that would have taken somebody else 6 months of work. That's the impressive part. It isn't so much what they wrote. It's that they did it in like no time at all. That's where this will be impressive, that instead of us processing two toxic players an hour, we're processing hundreds of toxic players, perhaps a minute, depending on the size of your game.
Mm-hmm.
So in this very specific narrow application, this represents a whole lot of work that doesn't have to be done now. And perhaps the idea more so is that it will be done accurately, or as accurately, maybe even more so than if people are involved. It's less emotional. It's less, less for someone have to shoulder in terms of, you know, just dealing with these kinds of people. Let a machine do it. I mean, if you believe machines are going to rise up and kill us one day, well, maybe this is all a bad idea because we're giving them the worst of humanity and saying you deal with it. But I think that to me is the application. It's saying, hey, computer, do this thing that's hard and do it 400 times faster than I could ever do it. And that's the whole point.
Yeah,
and I think that's their point here. I think that's all they want in the end is speed, and they want accuracy. And I mean, as much as we may say, well, AI has improved itself or it's got built-in biases, all this stuff. No, I agree. But if I sit down in front of an image generator and I say, make me a picture of Roger eating a giant turkey leg, it's going to do a really good job. It might get a pinky wrong and give him two pinkies. It might, his one eyeball might be a little skwampus, but it is enough for me to go, that's a representation of Roger eating a turkey leg and no one can tell me otherwise. That's what they're looking for here. But in terms of, was it toxic? Did they break the rules? Yes, they did. No, they didn't. Whatever, whatever. And process, boom, bam, bing. That's what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea, of course, is that this eventually causes or should cause people to self-moderate, where their behavior is like, you just can't come in here and act around like it's your, you own the place. And, you know, it's especially for games like Call of Duty that, you know, the single player campaign is now just a minor portion, even though it's the one I enjoy the most of these games. It's just a minor portion of the experience. The big thing is the online co-op matches or head-to-head matches. That's what it's all about. And you do need refs. You do need people there to ensure that things do not spin out of control. Right.
Yeah. Plus, it's a game as a service. They sell stuff after the fact. You're spending time and money in the store that they have there. Like, this isn't. It's also a customer service thing as well. It's not just everyone behaving themselves. It's like, are you having a good customer experience, which is very different than it used to be in games.
And I think this will be one of many, many AI-based moderation tools. I even suspect they'll have dummy players that are AI bots that are there just to receive abuse to see who the individuals are.
Be surprised if that's not already.
Yeah, I know they do it with real players now. They'll have employees who will. World of Warcraft was famous for this. They would have GMs, game managers, who were in the game pretending to be players, witnessing stuff so that they could then, you know, make a determination. Now you could do it in a very automated way. Again, without the emotion, without the human price, whatever that price we think is. And I'm all for this. Like, it's just about how good is it. If it's crappy, I'll go back to the drawing board.
I'll leave it with this. This needs to work reasonably well or better, right? It can't. If it's really flawed, then it's going to sour people on this.
Completely agree.
Right? You need to make sure it works out of the gate. Because if this flubs it like the first time out or the first few times out, it's going to send a bad message to players. It's like, well, oh no, that service has AI moderators. I don't want to be on that, so I'm not going to pay for it.
And if you want to avoid some PR nightmare, don't make anyone install anything extra. It's got to be
no punk busters or nothing like that.
No. You do that and you're just asking for a revolt. I mean, people still play your game, but it's still, you know, nobody hanging around for that.
Yeah. Well, this is the idea behind game streaming, right? Like, one of the ideas that I like about game streaming is I don't have to install anything, right? Yeah. So if they do need to do any sort of, you know, cheat blockers or anything, you know, they can do it within the game because it's not on your machine. It's you're just playing a remote version of it.
And I assume that's what's happening here. I'm sure there are hooks, but it's not like you have to install some third party thing down in your tray or some nightmare like that. Consoles are different, obviously, but yeah, like, it needs to be independent of that. But it's an interesting move forward. I fully believe that this may not be the ultimate example, but this is happening in this space and in others. It'll happen on social media more. I know it's already happening there, but, you know, we're going to get good enough where these robots are going to do our dirty work. And that's the point. Make it all easier. There's a reason why accountants, accountants love spreadsheets. Well, why? You can do 1,000 things faster than you used to be able to do them. So why wouldn't we look at this the same way I do?
I don't want to say the inefficiencies, but it eliminates a lot of the small stuff that often bog down the process.
Right.
Right. With a spreadsheet, you know, you don't have to worry about mixing papers together or, oh, I lost my binder clip, you know, and I need to get this client to make sure I don't mix it with this client. You know, it's a lot more, I don't want to say organized, but it's a little more manageable, right? These tools are there to help the moderators, the human moderators, who are given a lot of responsibility. Right. The tools to manage ideally more effectively. I mean, if the moderator is a jerk, you're kind of
that's a different problem. Yeah, but the thing is, do you in theory you eliminate that problem with AI as well, because the AI will never be a jerk unless you buy into conspiracies that AI will one day take over and whatever. But
well, I mean, it's the
AI
train
just
set,
specifically
right?
doesn't like me.
He's a jerk.
It's not that slur I use.
If you train your AI moderator to act like, you know, a WWE character, you know, like a heel or something, yeah, it's going to act like one. So
this
is one of those things, again, the implementation is going to be crucial for broader acceptance. If it's done right and it's done well, people say, hey, it's not a bad thing. If it's done poorly and people have bad experiences, they'll just point it and say, hey, this is why you don't use AI.
Yeah, and there'll be some of that anyway, because there always is. But I think that if they do this right, then players can complain all they want. The point is that the ones that are with bad and you be that's the other thing is you can show the transparency with this system much faster and easier. It's like, well, if you want to appeal your ban, what does that involve? Well, probably looking at the stuff we say you did, and then here's proof you said it, did it. Here's even audio proof that you said and did it.
I mean, there's so much of this that already exists. Like, okay, so for example, there are certain apps that are privacy focused where it's like, if you were to take a screenshot, the app knows you did that. I've done that once or twice, not even like trying to skirt a system of any kind, but I get a warning like, hey, don't do that again. Or, you know, you could be, kicked off the platform or I don't know, reported or, you know, something where I kind of go like, ooh, okay. Yeah. Good to know.
Even when you're putting your password in too many times or something like that, it's like,
exactly. Hey, it's there are certain measures that are automated that, you know, there's not a particular human that was mad at me that day type of thing, you know, and I think we're used to that on some level, the whole kind of like, well, if a certain word gets picked up audio wise, then I could get flagged in a similar way. And maybe not like outright ban hammered, but something where it's like you're warned or, you know, there's, you know, maybe you, I don't know, can't use the service for 24 hours or, you know, whatever it might be. Companies can kind of decide that for themselves. And as people get used to it and feel like it works, emphasis on it works, yeah, then
it works.
You know, I would feel better about it, especially if I was.
Well, I mean,
apparently.
And this is the one rub I was thinking about the entire time I was reading and then writing the story, is what do you do with people with accents? And I'm not even talking like over, you know, a non-native speaking accent. What if you're like from Boston or somewhere with, you know, you enunciate certain words that are either hard to identify or easy to confuse with another word or sets of words that might come off as abusive or sound not what it was actually.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have somewhere, but see, that's the point of the training. Because the machine is literally going to learn what those differences are. And it's going to be, you're going to have some initial stuff, maybe a false positive, but then you look at it. Well, that's the machine has now learned. It isn't a lost example. Like you can appeal it. And if you win that appeal, the machine will learn that, well, that happened here. In this particular use case, I can't speak to other use cases for this, but in this gaming moderation sphere, I want those mistakes. Hopefully a lot of that stuff they do in testing and they find that stuff out long before implementation. But even if they don't, no system's perfect the first time. That's the whole point of machine learning. It's going to have to learn somehow. So I don't know. To me, this is a positive move.
It's a brave
regardless.
New world.
And I don't love Activision and I don't trust Activision. I should make that really clear. I think Activision's they got some smarmy business up top, but as a thing to deal with toxicity, I don't care who they are. I think this is a good implementation.
Yeah. But one group of people we can always be happy that we have supporting us are our chat listeners, viewers, who have been supporting us throughout the show. We have Beats for the Mind, Nostradamus, Venjik, the Pac Northwest, Fallstar, and P. Schultz, New York, who've all followed us. P. Schultz, New York, also subscribed with Prime, as did Geek Mando, who resubscribed, as well as Got to Best and Matuba, who resubscribed for 1 month at Tier 1, and Moose2271, Zoe Brings Bacon, and PC Smiley. Thank you all for sharing us on with Bits.
Indeed. Over on the Patreon side, we were so pleased to welcome our three new patrons at the top of the show. And we were so happy. I'm going to do it again. So thank you again to Christopher, to Royce, and to Ole Them Bones, or maybe Ole Them Bones. O-L-E. Oh, I like your name either way. Didn't get any raises, but we love new patrons. Thank you for joining the crew. We hope to see more of you tomorrow. And thanks to everybody who supports us. You all are the best. You're good times.
It's going to be great. We have Tasia Custodi, as we mentioned on the end of today's DTNS tomorrow. And she is the other half of AI named the show, the new show that spun out from Experiment Week 2 weeks ago.
Yay!
So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be
excellent.
Super exciting.
You know, with the couple minutes we have left, I asked Scott, well, I don't know if I asked you, you and Roger, if you liked the idea of the lunch that I had, but my lunch was leftover stuffed zucchini. Roger was like, stuffed zucchini?
Like, how do you stuff,
how do you stuff a zucchini? Well, you don't really. But in these cases, like, these were like sort of large, you know, zucchini squash. And if you half them long ways and then kind of scoop out a little bit of the middle, but not too much, you're still leaving some zucchini.
Isn't this what Subway does when they cut their bread to make your sandwich? They cut in half.
Very
like
similar.
Long way,
yeah.
They scoop out some of the bread.
So they
scoop
do.
Out a little. Trench. Yeah. So you have room for the fun things. Sure. And then there was, you know, like panko and you know, some spices and some melted cheese in there. Not like a zucchini popper, which are also very good.
So wait, the inside had the panko, or is it the outside of the had panko?
Well, the
like when you have
crumbs.
The zucchini, is the zucchini
the
like...
The panko crumbs are sprinkled on top of the halved
Oh, okay,
zucchini.
But it's not like you breaded the whole zucchini.
No, no. In fact, that's an important thing. Yeah, this is not a deep fried anything. It's a stuff is put into the zucchini, open face, and then broiled.
Yeah,
open face broiled zucchini.
Yeah, with
that
fun things.
Soggy though. I mean, I'm just thinking because it's such
not
a...
real. No. Well, what you have to do because you broil it, and that's the whole point. Is like. Yeah, you're also cooking the zucchini a bit, but zucchini cooks really quick. So you're basically cooking everything on top of it, and then you
zucchini's
eat it.
Zucchini's mostly water.
There's some hydration happening, Roger.
I mean, Roger, you're mostly water. I'm mostly water. I don't know.
But I'm not being broiled either, or covered in panko dust.
Oh, I broiled myself over the weekend, and now I have a sunburn. Yeah,
dang.
Broiling humans don't recommend.
No,
don't recommend that.
I mean, no, you know, no shame to anyone who likes it, but I. Don't.
Oh no, that's great.
Broil as much as you'd like to be broiled.
Yeah,
let's
I guess
not
that's
over
right.
Broil.
Self broil. All right.
Yeah, yeah. Know your own broil capacity threshold. Oh goodness. I don't know. I thought the zucchinis were really good, so I wanted to tell everybody about them.
They sound fantastic. I would eat
They're
them.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. I know some
I'll
people don't like
it.
The squash family of veggies.
Zucchinis.
Squash. Oh, I love them.
I do
love
too.
Give me any kind of squash.
You got to cook it right. I don't like a yellow squash or a pumpkin squash are a little too
What are the green ones that look like miniature pumpkins? They're something squash.
Oh, I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like those are, I don't know, you wouldn't call them zucchini, I guess, but in the Italian squash family, that's a good question. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're more of a gourd than a squash. And then we get into,
gourd.
I don't really know the difference, except,
yeah, I don't
you know,
either.
I know what a pumpkin is. That's a gourd, but it's kind of like
a
squash, right?
Sure. I mean, a gourd, pumpkins are gourds, right? But they have squash-like properties.
Well, they're in the squash family.
Sure.
They're a type of squash, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we just grow them big for Halloween.
I love a squash. Love a squash. Oh,
squash.
Don't like a mushy squash. Like
no.
you said, Roger, like, how do you not overdo the zucchini? It can be overdone, and then it's like, ugh, gosh,
yeah,
you might as well be in the
cafeteria. Just deep fry it, be on the safe side.
Or do that.
The safe side.
Yeah, don't listen to anything I just said. Deep fry it. You're going to be
just
good.
Just remember,
to go.
We
yum,
give
yum,
out
yum.
Tech advice, not cooking advice.
Put some mozzarella in the middle of it. You got a popper.
All right. On that note, we'll have a great day and see you guys tomorrow with Tasia Custodi and Rob Dunwood.
Indeed. Have a wonderful day to you all, dear internet.
Good internet day. Something.
Day of good internet.
Good day, internet.